some of my current research. This is in collaboration with a former student, and Jingwen Su, and then a former postdoc, Howard Chan, who's now a faculty member at Emory, and a collaborator from EPA, Jerry David. Okay, here we go. What we are trying to do here is to understand the impact of potentially changing climatic conditions on human health. So let me start with a little bit of scientific motivation. So these extremely high temperatures can drastically reduce agriculture production, increase energy consumption, and also lead to some very harmful health effects, as it was the case relatively recently in 2003. In Europe, about 35,000 people died due to exposure to these very high temperatures. So this type of event has been a catalyst for a lot of the research that we are conducting now, trying to understand how climate change scenario would affect life expectancies. And those type of studies with climate change and adverse health conditions rely pretty heavily on deterministic climate models that would allow us to project into the future what the temperatures would be, and then we can make projections of what would be the life expectancy. So here we have an example of this type of model here on the left. So this is a deterministic model, a climate model, has been obtained from NCAR, the National Center for Atmospheric Research, where I have some collaborators there running this type of model. The resolution is 50 by 50 kilometers for each one of these grid cells. And what you have is daily maximum temperatures. That is what we are studying here. On the right, you have the locations at which we have the weather stations that would give us also information about these daily maximum temperatures. The reason why we rely on these deterministic models, even if they are not perfect, they have their own uncertainties and errors, is because we get, as you can see, better coverage across the space, but also across time. If we are interested in understanding is the case, yeah, well, the temperatures will be in 2040. We need to rely on this type of models. So the issue with the models is that they have different sources of errors and uncertainties. The main reason or the main sources of uncertainties in this type of deterministic climate models are due to the initial conditions for the models that need to be established, some of the mathematical approximations that needs to be done, and then uncertainties that we have in some of the physical parameters that we have in the model. So it's important to understand and calibrate these type of models before they're being used for risk assessment. And that's the objective of the work that's been presented here. So it's not unique to these climate models, but also chemistry models, for instance, for air pollution. So it's the same type of problem. When we try to understand the impact of pollution, or in this case, extreme weather on human health, we rely pretty heavily on these deterministic models. So the focus here is first to understand the performance of the models, to calibrate them, and to carry in our risk assessment the uncertainties associated to these models. So the standard approach to calibrate these type of models is to compare them to the observations just used in least squares. So what we have here is regression equation in which what we have as y would be our observations, so the maximum daily temperature, so the air quality at a given time and at a given location, a point in space. And then we have the output of the deterministic model Z at a given time, and these deterministic models give us the value of the maximum temperature or the pollution for a grid cell that contains potentially the location S. So the grid cell is denoted here with this big B. So what we do is to compare the deterministic model output with respect to the observations. So here we estimate these two parameters using least squares that will make some adjustment to the deterministic model, so somehow to make it match the observations. But this type of adjustment, really what is going is after the central tendency, the mean of these observations. So here in the graph at the bottom, so this is with a chemistry model in this case. So what we have is in red the monitoring data, the observations in this case for the ozone at first time, and then these are the adjustments made using this calibration approach, so the default right now to the observation, to the deterministic model output. So the red would be the calibrated model output. So what the calibration is doing is really adjusting the central tendency, the central part of these
many, we have different percentiles, so this will be a percentile, and these are the values of the ozone. So on black, here, black, what we have are the observations from the monitoring the patient, and this is the adjusted model output. So as you can see, there is a good match in here if you look at the central kind of the percentile here, so they both match, because that's what this approach is doing, match the central tendency. But that's not the case with the tails. So by using this type of approach, we don't calibrate the tails, and when we're talking about extreme weather, or when we're talking about pollution, the tails is the focus. So this type of approach is fail to calibrate the tails. So what we are doing here is introducing a framework that would allow us to calibrate all these percentiles. So we're going after the entire distribution, or after all the percentiles. And throughout the rest of the presentation, now we're working with percentiles, and now we're working with quantiles, instead of seeing values from 0 to 100, I'll be working 0 to 1. So that's the focus. So we want to try to make an adjustment here to the deterministic model output, not just for the median, for the central tendency or the mean, or in the second moment, the variance. We are trying to calibrate the entire distribution. So we want to match the entire distribution, all the percentiles for the deterministic model with what it would be for the observations on the ground. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about these quantiles, just to properly define the quantiles here. So if we have the deterministic model output Z, and we have a distribution, so that would be our distribution function. So here, the quantile function would be the inverse of the CDS. So really, it's equivalent to work with a distribution of trying to match distribution of the deterministic model output within the tail with the distribution for the observation. So I'm trying to work with the quantile. So here, the Q would be the quantile function for different quantile levels. So the tau would be the quantile levels, like the percentile. So here, the tau would be between 0 and 1. And these would be the quantile function. So here we are working with this quantile function, again, rather than the distribution, but this would be just the inverse of the CDF. So the classical approach to estimate these quantiles would be using this optimization approach, so it's just minimizing the expression here. So you do that separately for each one of the quantiles, and then you get your estimated quantile function. But by doing that separately for each quantile, what could happen is that you could have quantiles that they cross each other. As, for instance, the case here, so you have the across time, we have with different colors the different quantiles, and this is for the observations, and here, on the right, you have it for the deterministic model. And what happens here, for instance, we have the 99th quantile here, and it's lower than the 90th. So you could have quantiles that cross each other. So what we're introducing here is an approach that would allow us to estimate properly these quantile functions so the quantiles don't cross each other. And there are some approaches in the literature fairly recent to work on that. And we want to do that also across space because we want to estimate the quantile or the distribution for the observations as well as for the deterministic model across space in an efficient manner. So the idea is that we somehow are able to estimate what would be the entire distribution for the deterministic model output, for the climate model output, and then we do the same thing for the observations. So somehow from our observations, we are able to characterize the different quantiles. And then what we want is a transformation or a function that is going to match both of them. So what we are looking for is this function that when we apply that function to the deterministic model output will give us the observation. So that's the calibration function. So this calibration function will be a function of the quantile because it's possible that the transformation that we, or the bias adjustment or the error that we have for the deterministic model is different for different quantiles, and also it will be a function of the space because potentially the performance of the deterministic model could change across our geographic domain of interest. So this is another way to really explain the same concept. So we have the quantile for the observation, so that will be Q of Y, so that's the quantile function, and it changes across space, that's why it's a function of S, and then we have the quantile function or the quantile cross for the deterministic model output. So the goal here is to find a function that would match both of them. So here, if this is the, as a function of the different quantiles, here between 0 and 1, the same percentile that we have of the maximum temperature. So this would be the quantile function for the observation. And this is the quantile function for the deterministic model output. So what we are looking for is a transformation that when we apply that to the deterministic model output, will give us the observation of the time. So that's our transformation. Yes, so once we apply the transformation, what we get is the calibrated model output that will be the blue dot there. So this is the type of transformation. So this is the transformation that when we apply again to the deterministic model output. So that's what we are trying to obtain here, that transformation as a function of the different quantiles and then as a function of a space. Okay, so what we do is we have our daily maximum temperatures, Y, the deterministic model output, and we have to estimate here what will be the quantile function for the deterministic model output. We transform it such that it's going to match the quantiles that we have for the body observation. So that's what we're trying to do here. That way we'll be able to calibrate the tails of this deterministic model output, which is essential in this case since we are going after these extreme temperatures. So how can we estimate what the quantile function would be for this deterministic model output? Well, it's fairly simple. All that we have to do is write down a function, in this case, in an operometric manner, a function of the different quantiles, and it has to be a monotonic function. So we can easily do that with just a basis expansion here. So we are using bases that would ensure that this is going to be a monotonic function as a function of tau. So we use here integrated spline basis functions that are monotonic. So all that we have to make sure is that the coefficients are positive. So that way we have a monotonic function as a function of tau. We want that to change across space because could be that the quantile for the deterministic model output will change across the space is the case. So then the coefficients for the basis function space are allowed to change across the space. And that's really all that entitles to characterize the quantile function. So that way we have a proper characterization of what would be this deterministic model output. A twist that we do here is that so we have this non-parametric characterization of what would be the quantile function, but we're gonna put make sure again we're going to put some parametric tails for this distribution to allow us to estimate properly some of these extreme tails where we have very few observations. So here, just a little bit more about this.
Are the deterministic models, are they good enough to do this in terms of a monotone way and still get the tails? I mean, because you could imagine that it's not predicting the tails behavior very well, so if you assume monotonicity, then you're not going to get the tails very well.
The climate models are really, they don't really do a good job necessarily with the tails because it's climate. So if you're talking about deterministic models like air pollution, they do maybe a better job. In this case of the maximum temperatures, they actually, with the temperatures, they tend to do a better job because they have a more, I'm going to say calibrated, though they keep calibrating the central tendency. So it's true that the tails are a little bit less reliable, and that's the reason why we are sort of going more after this parametric characterization of the tails using one of the extreme value type of density functions like the Pareto. So a little bit more about this integrated spline. So all that we are doing here is just a basis expansion of this quantile function. We work with these piecewise cubic polynomials. They are integrated, so they are already a monotonic function. So here you can see they are spline. There are other types of monotonic spaces that we could use by the integrated version. The reason why we like to work with the I-spline is because they are piecewise, so they really allow us to do a better job when we get to the tail behavior, because here there is quite a lot of mixing. When you are here working with the tails, you have all the bases and explaining the tail behavior. Here you can isolate a little bit better the tail. So a result with fewer degrees of freedom, with fewer basis components, we are able to characterize better tail behavior. So this is just an example. On the left, you have the ice line trying to explain this curve. And with 4 degrees of freedom, we can explain it as well as if we are using 15 degrees of freedom with the integrated person polynomial. So different choices, but the ice lines, they They don't seem to be very sensitive to the node placement. They have second order difference stability, which is of great interest, and we are working trying to obtain the likelihood. They're computationally efficient, and with very few nodes, we can easily estimate really complex features. So this is really our characterization of the entire distribution of the Sanefi-S identity function for the deterministic model output. So we get really our behavior here more in the central part with these non-parametric ice lines. We obtain the quantile function, and from that we can recover what would be the density function, and then we have parametric tails. So once we have what would be the characterization of the quantile for the deterministic model output, then we do the same thing for the observation. And now what we have to do is to find this function that we might obtain, and this is the way we do it. So now we write down what would be the quantile function for the observation, Q of y, but we write that in terms of the basis, the ice lines, but the ice lines are now functions of these quantiles for the deterministic model output. So that way, we obtain our transformation here, and it has to change across the space. So again, we have coefficients that change across the space, the alphas here. Okay, so now let's go back to our data, and we're going to implement this approach to be able to project what would like technically to be 2040, 2050. So here the interest is in heat waves, which is not just high temperatures, but high temperatures that are maintained for over two consecutive days. And these high temperatures should be above certain really specific thresholds, like the 99% higher or 97% higher. Here we're going to focus on the southern part of the United States. Here's Alabama, is the area in which we have seen a high increase in these daily maximum temperatures. And this is the domain of interest, and where we have the deterministic model output and then also the observations on the ground from the weather stations. So here, the deterministic model output has been obtained from the National Center for Atmospheric Research, 50 by 50 kilometers resolution. And then the health endpoint here is going to be mortality, daily mortality, non-accidental mortality. Okay, so we are going to work with the deterministic model output using historical data for the last 10 years, our deterministic model output, and our observations. So using historical data, we're able to estimate that transformation, that calibration, that would be different for different quantiles and different across the space. So that's our function G, calibration. And then what we do is to write in a health model to make mortality to these environmental stress or these very high temperatures. And what we do then is if we go into the future by using our projected temperatures, calibrated temperatures, in our health model as an input that will give us what is expected life expectancy. So these are...
So let me show you some of these calibrated model outputs. Alabama, and what we have here, so these are the different quantiles, again, like the percentiles, and here what we have is the daily maximum temperatures in degrees Celsius, and what we have in black is the deterministic model output, in red the observation, and then in blue is our calibrated model output, so we can see how this gets on top of the observation, so we're able to transform the deterministic model output, so that's my the entire distribution of the percentiles and the observation. And then this way, what would happen if you just use the default, the standard, you know, with the square approach. So you don't match the tails, you do match the center, but you don't match the tails. So in the story, all the different locations.
And then we go into the future. So now we calibrate the future projection.
So first we look at the current observations in black, from the deterministic model output. Our current observations. Based on that, we are able to estimate a calibration function and we'll project that into the future. So in blue, we have the future temperatures from the deterministic model output, and in green, our calibrated version of these projected temperatures.
Okay, so
So this is the type of disagreement that we see in the quantile functions. So this is a root mean square error we get across the space and in the different quantile levels. So what happens is that if you look at the central tendency, the median, the 50 percentile, if you don't calibrate it, so this is the type of error that you have. But it's much more significant when you go to the tails, the 95th percentile or the 5th percentile. And this is the error that you get when you calibrate it. So quite a remarkable reduction in the type of error that we have, about 76%. Okay, so now in our health model, what we are doing, so this implement all this is in the context of our health endpoints here. So we have a Poisson model, because we are looking at mortality counts in these cities, and we are interested in the effect of this daily maximum temperature. So we have a natural cubic spline, so we have a nonlinear temperature effect, and there is definition for us here is going to be the focus going to be on the heat waves. So the heat waves are going to be days that when we maintain temperatures very high that would exceed a given threshold for at least 2 days, two consecutive days. And then, of course, we include all the usual confounders, city indicators, date of the week, age group. So this is our relative risk. So here we have a relative risk as a function of this daily maximum temperature. And you can see a very steep increase here once we see about 32.5 degrees Celsius, which is about 90.5 degrees Fahrenheit. So here the relative risk would be the number of deaths that are attributable to these heat wave days, the events, the days that are at risk, the heat wave, with respect to what it would be the expected number of deaths for the for the reference days, which would be the days without a heat wave. Yeah, so tonight, if we look at the projections that we have here, so if you, we look at what is the increase in these quantile values, the increase in the maximum rate temperatures in degrees Celsius, the different quantiles here, and for the uncalibrated model output versus the calibrated model output. So if you look what happens again, the median, percentile here, so we have about the same, so it doesn't change that much. It's about 3 degrees increase from 2000 versus 2040 in the daily maximum temperatures. But what is happening here is that you look at the higher tail, the 95th percentile versus the 5th percentile. For the higher percentile, the deterministic model output tends to overestimate what the daily maximum temperatures would be. So you have you're projecting an increase of 547,000 versus 4.27 in the calibrated model output. And for the lower quantiles, it means that we are under-predicting what will be the increase in the daily maximum temperature. Then with respect to the number of days at risk, the days with heat waves, so this is what we had now the, from 1990 to 2000. So these are the number of days with heat waves. So those are when we have two consecutive days exceeding a given threshold, 99.5% and 7.5. And this is what will be in the 2040. So that is a very significant increase with the 95% intervals. And now, yes, the excess that we have in the number of deaths due to these heat wave events. So that's the expression that we have above. And this is what it would be now in the 1990 and 2000. So this is the excess that are attributable to the heat waves versus the projection that we have into the future. And you can see, again, a really very significant increase. This is just in the Alabama area. Right. So that would be, so just to wrap it up, the main point is that when we work with these type of deterministic models in the context of climate, we are also really trying to calibrate the models, in particular paying attention to the scales. But the standard approaches for calibrating of deterministic models, they just focus on the first two moments, the mean and the variance. So it's important to pay attention to the scales, because that's what we are doing here. So at the same time, the approach that we introduced here is another innovative way to characterize density functions by those periods in time. And the main point from a public health point of view is this increase, in fact, an increase in the number of deaths
attributable to heat waves. So thank you. Thank you very much.